Idaho was given a ranch in 2000 that basically had no cows on it and a lot of hay ground. And so in order to generate a cow herd, one of the things they did was they did a cattle drive. Got over 100 heifers from all across Idaho to be given, to be donated to them. In addition, they sent the old commercial cows from the Charlet herd to the campus down there. So what did we end up with? We ended up with a system that looked a little bit, that looked a lot like those things that Tom Briggs told us earlier this morning that he didn't want to have anything to do with, okay? So before I got there, one of the managers that was there decided he'd try and straighten things out at least a little bit, and he spent a lot of time breeding cows to make replacement heifers that were predominantly Angus breeding, but also they were using, at the time, Hereford bulls to make black baldy calves to sell F1 calves. When I got there, I said, you know, this is kind of a shame because that F1 female is really what we've talked about that brings us a lot of power in terms of heterosis. And maybe we should try and capitalize on that. The other unique thing about being a research institution is that everybody else wants to use your cows, right? Not your cows, but the university cows or the state's cows. So invariably, about the time you get the cow herd straightened out, somebody has this great project that involves breeding to Barzonas. And then we end up having to retain those heifers in the herd, and what we end up with is back to this mess, okay? So I said, how can we try and avoid this cycle of mongrelization that we get into? And the answer, at least at the time for me in terms of interest, was, well, let's think about trying to use sex semen on a small percentage of cows that we keep to be our generate our females and our replacement heifers. We'll maintain a Hereford Angus cross situation, and on a core group of cows, always have Hereford Angus cross heifers, and then we can breed whatever we want for research purposes, but we'll still have that Hereford Angus cross herd when all is said and done. And so we got interested in sex semen. These are kind of what our heifers look like today. Basically red and black baldies with a few solid blacks in there. We still have enough red gene, even though, we have a very sophisticated two-breed rotational system for our heifers. If your daddy was an Angus, you get bred to a Hereford. If your daddy was a Hereford, you get bred to an Angus. So back in your lineage, there may be another red gene, so we come up with some red baldies from time to time. So when we talk about kind of where we are with sex semen, and we did a good amount of that last night when the NAV, I kind of think of about 15, 20 years ago with fixed-timed AIs, we were down around 35-40% fixed-time pregnancy rate. Dave Patterson and a lot of others spent a lot of time helping to develop protocols that made this a lot better, and now we're up to 55 or 65%. So kind of in the sex semen world, we're back here again, because we're still learning a lot of the things about sex semen that we could do better and maybe improve our situation. You guys saw last night that Sex and Technologies, it does all the sorting for all the majors. Bulls does. But I think probably what you maybe didn't realize was that in 2008, there were virtually no beef bulls that were sorted and available through the major bull studs. They were available with custom services. But now, by 2013, we've got over 79 bulls in the major bull studs that are sorted, and we've got another 49 or so at Sex and Technologies that are in their catalog. So surely not a huge bull battery to pick from in order to make genetic selections, but certainly a lot better off than we were just 5 years ago. So we know that gender-selected semen has been used for a long time in the dairy industry, and that they've been using it primarily to produce females. So those of us in the beef industry don't have to worry about those stupid black and white things that end up getting fed out and going in. Now, if you're a cattle feeder and you've ever fed Holsteins, Holsteins are pretty good feeding cattle. They're very consistent, and they grade fairly easily. But anyway, when we look at the data over a large data set that Melders Arnett put together, we see that pregnancy rates of sex semen is about 50% in dairy heifers and 29% in dairy cows. Now, remember, in lactating dairy cows, when they get about 40% pregnancy rate to AI, they throw a party, and, the fireworks go off and everything else. So remember that lactating dairy cow is quite a challenge to get bred. So let's talk a little bit about kind of the things that we and others have learned about using sex semen. This is one of our sexed calves, and we've got quite a few of those calves now on the ranch. So in beef heifers, roughly we're talking about somewhere between a 10 and 15% decrease in pregnancy rates. Early study showed 3 to 13. A larger study showed a huge range of 4 to 38. And this is a more recent study that was done by the Nebraska group, in which when they inseminated the heifers, it was a combination of breeding after observed estrus as well as mass mating. And in that one, again, you see about a 15% decrease. So roughly we can say that in heifers we're looking at about a 15 to 20% decrease, 10 to 20% decrease in pregnancy rates when we breed AI. How about postpartum cows? Now when we first talked about using sex semen in postpartum cows, the industry or the sorting folks were not real much at promoting the use of sex semen in postpartum cows because of some of the other issues we've talked about with getting postpartum cows bred. This was some work that we did that related to our work in understanding if whether we could use ex-sorted semen to develop replacement heifers for our use there at the ranch. Certainly, we bred more cows than we needed to generate the replacement heifers, but to give us an idea. One thing that you need to know about the conventional semen is that in a couple of years, there was another project going on so that sires that were sexed were not necessarily sires that are represented in the conventional. And in that particular project, there were some custom collected bulls that, quite frankly, you know, wouldn't have passed CSS standards and so shouldn't have been there in the first place. So that suppressed that. But the take-home message from this particular slide is that even when we used fixed-timed AI, we were averaging around 50% AI pregnancy rate with sex semen. So we felt very, very encouraged about that. Now, as it turned out, part of that ability was that we had a particular bull that did very, very well for us. But we felt like there was a lot of optimism there with over 235 inseminations on the sex side and over 500 inseminations on the conventional side. So other studies that have looked at postpartum cows, there was a large southeastern study that basically was a train wreck. They reported about a 33% decrease in pregnancy rates compared to use with conventional semen. But across a number of studies, sex semen performed fairly similarly in postpartum beef cows and heifers. So I think in beef cows we can say we can use that particular product in both heifers and postpartum beef cows with the understanding, as Dave talked about last night, that those animals that are in heat are better off. So what about the factors of success with sex semen? Well, as you remember, David talked about last night, cows that come into heat, and this is just some data from a couple of years that we had, but it's pretty much uniform and lines up with Dave's when we look at all 6 years that we've been involved in using sex semen. Cows that are in heat, whether they're bred with conventional semen or sex semen, we get along with fairly well. This is a fixed-timed AI, whether they're in heat or not in heat by the time. And then these questionable ones are ones that patches were partially activated. So we see, again, a depression of about 10% and a depression of about 15, 16% in those that weren't in heat from conventional to sex. And again, a significant depression from those animals that were in heat and not in heat with the sex semen. So if we can identify animals as being in estrus or having been in estrus before fixed-timed AI, then sex semen works pretty well for us. The other thing that we looked at, as you might have mentioned, remember from last night, the sorting process does damage that sperm, and it damages sperm in such a way that we can't always identify that through the microscope. And so one of the things that we talked about is the lifespan of that sperm in the female reproductive tract is much shorter. And so we have been undertaking some studies for the last 3 years looking at what if we delayed the time of insemination in a fixed-timed AI system from 72 to 80 hours. So we increased it by 8 hours. We pushed this group supposedly 8 hours closer to ovulation. And what we have seen over a large number of animals, we've got more animals in this data set yet that are not in here, but the results are the same. We're running about 35% pregnancy rate to sex semen and no real advantage to delaying that insemination after fixed-timed AI. So we're not picking up anything, and I think David also talked about that some last night. This is a graphic representation of some of the work that Jordan talked about last night, in which they looked at whether animals were bred to conventional or sex semen, or bred to sex semen, and animals that did not respond with estrus prior to the fixed-time AI time, received GnRH and then were at the time of fixed time insemination for the animals that were in heat, and then were inseminated 20 hours later. And if you remember from that discussion, what we see is no matter what particular type of semen we use, we do see a depression in that those animals that are not in estrus prior to fixed time DAI have poorer pregnancy rates than those that were in estrus prior to fixed time DAI. This particular study, they showed a very dramatic, we really haven't seen that poor a pregnancy rate to animals that weren't in heat, but certainly we've had some groups that were down around 10 and 25% that those groups of animals that didn't express estrus before fixed time DAI. And I think this is a neat data set, and that's why I included it in there, that delaying this may be another option for us other than giving conventional semen to these non-responders. So again, another way we can improve our abilities. The one thing that, and this data set, and I don't want to say there's anything definitive on this because the numbers are small, but this is one particular year. But if we add up a bunch of years with the bulls that we have, we see a similar type of situation in that we do have some bulls that seem to perform better than other bulls. Now, whether we'll eventually get enough insemination on those bulls to say definitively, this bull 2 is better than that bull 5, I don't know at this point. But there is a hint, there is something out there that we need to investigate. The other point of this slide is I often get asked the question, well, is X-sorted semen better than Y-sorted semen in terms of fertility? And the answer is no. They're equal in fertility, or lack thereof, perhaps, if you want to look at it that way, across the sexes. So we don't see any more problems with Y-sorted semen than we do with X-sorted semen. So to sum this up, breeding after estrus is best, but fixed-time DAI seems feasible, and we're continuing to work on strategies to improve those fixed-time DAI pregnancy rates. You need to go into the situation knowing that it's going to be a 10 to 20% decrease in pregnancy rates. There's maybe some greater variability in success due to a number of factors, but fertility is similar in postpartum cows and heifers. And then finally, I didn't show this data, but there's been a lot of data that shows that these calves from sex semen perform just as well as those calves that come from conventional semen, and there's no reason why they shouldn't. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other technologies that we've mentioned, because they are the tools that we use in genetic improvement. Let's talk about embryo transfer and IVF. And so Galen Fink talked a lot last night about using sex semen in an embryo transfer program, but initially when sex semen came out and was available to beef industry, we were kind of discouraged from using it in embryo transfer. So there were a number of studies that were done, and I won't go into these individual studies, but the bottom line from all these studies is that there's about a 20 to 35% decrease in transferable embryos. Now you saw that the data that Galen had last night showed that he really didn't see a big depression in the number of transferable embryos that came from sex semen versus those that came from conventional semen. And perhaps that had to do with his trying to get 20 million cells of semen and sperm into those donor cows and his strategy at which he did that. But I think one of the things that we can say is that there may be a reduction, or we may be equal to conventional semen. The advantage is that we are now going to have all of the sex that we want. If we've got a cow-bull mating that's producing sires that the commercial cattlemen really want, but we have trouble getting rid of those heifers, now all of a sudden we've got all bulls from that mating, and we don't have to use up our recipient cows by transferring embryos into them. The other thing is in vitro transfer uses considerably less sperm. It only takes 600 to 1,500 sorted sperm to fertilize an oocyte in vitro. That means every straw could fertilize upwards of 1,400. That's if you just do the math. And ovum pickup is the typical method for harvesting oocytes. So that's where they go in and they aspirate oocytes out of the follicles that are already on the ovary and mature those and then breed them with or fertilize them with sex semen. Pregnancy rates are produced with these in vitro embryos are 30 to 50%, which is fairly comparable to other in vitro produced embryos. And this particular study happened to be in Brazil, where they fertilized these embryos in vitro, and then they had to send them quite a ways. So instead of maturing them all in the laboratory, they put them in warmer units and shipped them all the way across the other side of Brazil. And they actually did their maturation while they were in transit, and they still got along very well. We see some reduced cleavage or blastocyst formation rates, which just means we've got fewer transferable embryos than we normally would get with conventional semen. Newer thing that's come out, I'm sure there's maybe some other companies doing it, but Transova is the one that I'm familiar with. They call it reverse sorting. I don't know why they picked that particular name, because it doesn't really make any sense to me. We're not taking sex semen that was sorted and making it a mixed 50-50 system again. But what they are doing is taking previously frozen conventional semen, thawing that semen, running it through the sorter, and using it for IVF. And so this allows the sexing of semen from bulls that are no longer available to produce semen. And so it again provides us another opportunity in terms of genetic material that we can use for genetic advancement. So let's talk about some of the things that we really can do in an application standpoint with sex semen. And I think the one that's of greatest use to us at this point is to develop maternal lines for use with terminal sires. And if we kind of look at what we've done in the beef industry, I hope most of you would agree with me that we've been pretty poor at developing maternal lines and then using terminal bulls on those maternal lines in order to produce more beef per cow. And compared to our competing meat industries, we definitely are behind the eight ball on doing that. So sex semen, I think, gives us that opportunity because now we have the chance to develop some maternal lines using sex semen that, again, doesn't use up all the females in our herd to generate these replacements. So let's look at this kind of situation. What we do at the research ranch right now is we have a subset of what we call elite cows that at this point in time are somewhat poorly identified in terms of the criteria that we use to identify those cows because our record system lapsed a little bit before I got there. But the Simmental Association is helping generate EPDs for our commercial cows, and hopefully in the future we'll be able to select our commercial cows utilizing those EPDs. So we have one-time fixed-time AI using exsorted semen followed by natural service, and we're ending up with somewhere around 65 to 75% females utilizing this particular method out of that group of cows. Another option would be to intensively estrus detect these cows over three estrus cycles, and then we probably would end up with 85 to 80% females coming out of that group. So we could then utilize a smaller group of females. What would that do for us in terms of how many females we need to generate replacements? Let's look at some examples. Typical for our herd, we have about 300 cows. We keep somewhere between a 10 and 15% replacement rate. And let's say the average weaning weight rate is 90%. So we need 45 replacement heifers every year, and we have to breed 100 cows to these maternal type bulls in order to generate those 45 replacements. So what happens is we end up taking one-third of the herd at least to generate our replacements. They produce 45 heifers that we want, but they may produce 45 steers that the market isn't too happy with. Those ones that Tom Brink says, boy, they're just kind of average cows. Maybe they're not performing the way we'd like them to. If we go into the strategy of using the exsorted semen, if we use the fixed-time AI followed by natural service system, now instead of 100 cows, we only need 75 cows to produce those 45 heifers. We still have 22 steers, and we're only utilizing 25% of the herd. If we go with the intensive estrus detection method, then we're down to 60 cows, only producing 9 steers. So now we're only needing 20% of the herd to generate our females. This is data from work that we did when we were trying to generate those females across years. It's just a comparison of female to male ratios across the different years. And the average across those 3 years is 65% female, 35% male for the gender-selected semen groups, and almost an exact 50-50 for the control groups. And again, performance information on these heifers just demonstrates that they were no different at weaning than the other heifers, that can conventionally semen-produced heifers. So we can be successful in doing that. As a result, we can increase some of the value of the progeny that come from these terminal sires and these sex semen-produced heifers. Increase productivity of the maternal line, and the other thing that we could do is we increase selection pressure, which is a good thing and a bad thing, right? Because if we're doing a good job at selection, and we increase that selection pressure, we're moving in the right way more rapidly, right? But if we don't, we're just screwing up faster, okay? So we need to be careful then in our selection. But as we've talked about all through this conference, we may need to retain ownership on those calves to capture their full value. The other thing that is a distinct possibility, especially as we improve our ways of identifying genetically superior individuals, is a heifer-heifer system. So a system in which we utilize all the information we can on EPDs, gene markers, and everything to make those selections of replacements as heifers at a very early age. Now, the dairy industry is doing this to some extent. I visited with Norm Vinsel, and he says they're doing it, but sometimes maybe only so well. And we probably don't have quite as much genetic information as they do. And so maybe we're still farther away from this than I hope. But in this particular case, what we do is select those heifers that we believe would produce, be good dams to produce us more replacement heifers. And so all replacement heifers would then be bred to exsorted semen out of the desirable sires that we had picked with that have the maternal traits that fit our particular environment and work in our system. A side benefit is we know that heifer calves are lighter at birth than bull calves, and so therefore we already get a decrease in dystocia by heifers having heifer calves. We would definitely decrease the generation interval because now all these heifers are producing the next generation for us as two-year-olds rather than waiting until they're three or four or five, depending on when they had the first heifer. And then replacement heifers would be older at breeding under these particular systems, or if we have heifers that are older at breeding, then there is an advantage. Like I said, it's being used in the dairy industry. And I guess for the discussion today, I'd like to see what the thoughts were on that. Then the last thing I want to visit with you about is shifting gender ratios. And this is some work that we've gotten into over the last 3 years for a variety of reasons. The first reason, really, was to look at, is there any advantage to taking a group of cows, breeding them all to Y-sorted semen in order to generate more steers in a commercial operation? We know we can shift those gender ratios in the seed stock operations using sex semen and being of value. But is there going to be an economic advantage to do this in the commercial situation? And are we there yet? In other words, are pregnancy rates good enough to let that happen? The other advantage of that we'll talk about in a little bit. So shifting gender ratios, as we talked about earlier, a commercial bull producer might want to use Y-sorted semen to produce more bulls, especially out of a very popular bull that's selling very well and has good genetic merit for the commercial producers in his area. Or an operation that's focused on producing replacement heifers as their primary output might want to breed more of their cows to X-sorted semen so that they get more females, so they now have more females to breed and sell as bred heifers. And then certainly we talked about creating female lines and X-sorted. Commercial application, might there be a marketing advantage? Not only from just producing steers, but as we look across the country in our smaller cow herds, and even in the West, where we have some herds that are 150, 200 cows, it's really hard to produce a full tractor trailer load of single-sex calves off of one ranch. And so what we see is those individuals that either have to market mixed loads of tractor trailer lots, or they go through what is common in the Southeast, where we have our graded feeder calf or calf pools, graded feeder calf sales or calf pools, we see a decrease in marketing value or power in those animals that aren't full tractor trailer loads of single sex off a single ranch. And so that alone may be enough to tip the equation in our favor, and then maybe meeting some specific consumer needs, customer needs of customers farther up the food, the production change. I don't know if Willie's in here somewhere, and so this is Encore, so I get a cup of coffee or that for putting that up for you. That's your end. Okay. So what's the impact of various sex ratios using values that we've gotten for our calves over the past few years? So roughly, when we sell on our vaccinated tractor trailer lots through Superior Livestock, we're getting, in this particular data set, about $144 a hundredweight for the steers. And the one particular year we had got $144 a hundredweight for the heifers. Steers weighed 680, heifers weighed 580. Other years we see those heifers averaging about $139 a hundred, but still weighing 580 versus that. The other thing that we ran into, even with 300 cows, is we'd have a full potload of steers. We'd promise a potload of heifers, and we would scrounge deep into our replacement heifer pool to get full tractor trailer load of heifers. And then we also had this odd lot of steers that we then had to market at a disadvantage. And through using sex semen, we now have our full pool of replacement heifers that we want, and we're selling two tractor trailer loads of full of steers every year. This would show what would happen at these different ratios based on those prices. So by shifting from a 50-50 to a 60-40, we increase revenue to the place at about $4,300, and then that goes up to over $12,000. Well, what happens if we overlay that with the cost of semen? So if that increased semen cost is only $10 a unit for sexed versus conventional, then at $3,000 for the additional cost of unit, we're bringing home a little bit of profit because we were going to AI all these cows anyway. And then you can see the different cost for increased semen value, and then this is the increased cost of home. Now, obviously, if we have decreased conception rates to that, we also may have some lighter weaning weights. That hasn't necessarily been factored in there, but you can see that there is some potential, and Gen X has a good spreadsheet on their website you should go to if you want to put in your own numbers to figure out what those advantages may or may not be for using sex semen. I think really one of the big advantages is going to be to help some of our smaller producers come up with tractor trailer loads from a single ranch and garner an added, you know, $35 to $50 a head that we get for marketing in that type of marketing environment, as opposed to just running them through the sale barn. So that's an added value to potentially using sex semen in those herds, but we'll have to see. So kind of to wrap a few things up, fixed time day AI pregnancy rates from gender-selected semen or sex semen vary from 35 to 50% in general. AI followed by natural service can shift those gender ratios enough to be of value. And as we improve that pregnancy rate to that fixed time AI, we'll see that go up. It seems like really if we're looking at a target for shifting to more steers than heifers, the target really needs to be about around that 70% steers to 30% heifer ratio to get us to enough added value for those steers to justify, at least at this point in time, with the pregnancy rates that we have talked about today, to utilizing gender-selected semen in a commercial operation. And as we better understand the impact of bulls as well as timing of AI on fertility, I think we'll improve this, and we talked about that a little bit last night. So I think we've got some options. And then just as a parting shot, I put this in after the discussion this morning. These are cattle that come out of our project. So our cows that are at the research ranch, we have 60 cows that are bred to X-sorted semen that to produce predominantly our Hereford Angus or Angus Hereford females that go back into replacement. The remaining 240 cows bred to Y-sorted semen get bred to terminal sires. And they're picked by either dollar beef for the Angus or terminal index for the Simangus and Simmental. So this is a project we've entered into with the Simmental Association, and AgriBeef is helping us out by their feeding those cattle for us and giving the carcass data back. We've been averaging 65% steers in that group. That is fixed time day I once with Y-sorted semen, and then the cleanup bulls are turned out. This year, so far, we've harvested 76 of those steers. The rest are hanging up, have hung up in the plant. We just haven't received the data back. This group of 76 steers average 836 pounds hot carcass weight, 14-inch square ribeye. They fed them for plenty long. There's little fat on 6/10 of an inch of back fat. They were yield grade 3s, 92% choice, and 44% upper 2/3 of choice. Those are not 100% Angus cap. Okay. All of them have a little bit of Hereford in them. Some of them have half Simmental, and some of them are half Angus. One of the sidebars on this project is we're trying to demonstrate to local producers that utilizing crossbred bulls could add some heterosis to their calf crop and still, with their breeding on their cows, still allow them to take advantage of some of the Angus-based value-added programs that are out there. But at the same time, bringing in some heterosis from the Simmental side. So, as you can see, I think we've got potential, as was discussed earlier, if we have a very planned crossbreeding system to come up with a highly acceptable product for the consumer. Now, the next 100 and some odd steers that get killed will probably turn that upside down, right, Jane? When we do projects like that. So I think, you know, the future is kind of inescapable. Technology is one of those things that we're going to have to continue to adopt. In the future, I think fertility of sex semen will improve. We discussed that last night. Applications will continue to develop. And at first, when sex semen came out, we heard this, oh my gosh, sex semen's going to ruin the industry. We've worked so hard at AI, and people will use this, and then they'll quit using AI. And I don't think that's the case, because I think the people that are using sex semen have a healthy understanding of what's involved. So it's a technology that's time to come, and producers need to understand those risks and limitations. To cool you off this afternoon, I brought you a warm calving scene from north central Idaho. That's a typical March day for us. Sometimes the sun shines, loves the time it doesn't, but we always have a pretty shot of the mountains there. I really want to thank all of these groups that supported us. ABS, GenX, Select Sires, Pfizer donated the ester synchronization products. The Simmental Association and the Northwest Simmental Breeders has been working with us primarily by providing cleanup bulls for us, some young sires that they're interested in, AgriBeef company that's doing the finishing, and then, of course, we supply a little bit of our own financing as well. The other thing that's interesting about my station is the good news is I get the money back from the sales of the cattle. The bad news is I get the money back from the sales of the cattle, because 90% of my operating comes from sale of cattle. And if anybody's been around a research station, we don't necessarily do things with great economic efficiency just because of the way research is. With that, I thank you. I apologize for not having a copy of this paper in the proceedings, but if anybody's interested, there's my email address, and I'll be glad to send you some proceeding papers that I have on hand. With that, Jane, be glad to take questions.